WA Premier Roger Cook and his deputy, Rita Saffiotti, have descended on Canberra for talks with the federal government over the future of Western Australia's GST carve-out. Under Morrison government-era reforms, the state keeps at least 75 cents for every dollar of GST revenue. It's a deal that's drawn strong criticism from several economists, including my next guest, independent economist and principal of Carina Economic Advisory, Sol Eslake. Sol, welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Good morning, Sally. Thank you for having me on again.
Let's get back to the basics here. You've previously labelled WA's GST deal as, quote, the worst public policy decision of the 21st century. In your view, why is it so bad?
Because it undermines a fundamental principle that's been in place since the 1930s, ironically in the aftermath of the Wexit referendum of 1933, that seeks to ensure that each state and territory has a similar capacity to provide its citizens with public services like schools and hospital and policing, whilst levying on them a similar burden of state taxes and charges. That's why in Australia it matters far less which state you live in as to the quality of schooling your kids get, the quality of healthcare that you and your family get, the quality of policing or environmental protection that you and your community get, than it does, for example, in the United States in particular, where there's an enormous difference in those things according to which state you live in, but also other federations like Canada and Germany. And that principle, which has underpinned the distribution of federal grants to states and territories since 1936 and since the introduction of the GST in 2000, has been fundamentally undermined by the decision that was originally made by the Morrison government with the support of the then Labor opposition in 2018 and extended by the Albanese government. It undermines the principle behind the biggest single spending program in the federal budget, which is the distribution of the GST, and it's resulted in the biggest blowout in the cost of any individual government decision, with the possible exception of the NDIS. This deal was, when it was originally imposed, meant to cost the federal budget, and I emphasise it's costing the federal budget, not payments to the other states and territories. It was originally meant to cost the federal budget $9 billion over 8 years. That cost has now blown out on the most recent estimates to $60 billion over 11 years. And the result of it is that Western Australia, this financial year, will get almost $6 billion of GST revenue more than it needs to be able to provide its citizens with the same standard of services as people in other states and territories, whilst levying on Western Australians a similar burden of state taxes and charges. And remember here, we're talking about the richest state in Australia, richer than the rest of the country by a bigger margin than New South Wales or Victoria ever were when they were the richest states in Australia through the 20th century. And it's all because between the 2016 and 2025 elections, Western Australia in effect held the balance of power in the federal House of Representatives, and both sides of politics were desperate to retain or regain WA seats in Parliament, so they caved in to what was in effect blackmail by Australia's richest states.
The WA government has made the argument that the current GST share that WA receives is invested into economic infrastructure that drives the national economy. Is that a fair assessment?
No, it's completely fatuous. WA's own budget figures show that over the next 5 years, total investment spending in infrastructure by the Western Australian government and its public enterprises will represent 2.1% of Western Australia's gross state product. That's the smallest investment by any state government as a proportion of its economy's gross state product in the country, and it compares with an average for all states and territories across the country of 3.1%. More specifically, the railway and port infrastructure that Western Australian mining companies use to get their minerals out of the ground onto ships from which they can be taken to their customers, mostly in North Asia, has predominantly been built by the mining companies themselves, in contrast to the infrastructure that's used by, for example, coal mining companies in Queensland and New South Wales, which was built and maintained by state government authorities until fairly recently when they've been privatised. So the suggestion that WA's resources boom wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for massive amounts of investment by the WA state government, past and present, is just completely fatuous. It's without foundation whatsoever, in much the same way as Western Australia's assertion that it's only getting a small proportion of what it calls its GST revenue back. The truth is that nobody knows, least of all the Australian Tax Office, which collects the GST. Nobody knows how much GST is collected in each state or territory because the Tax Office doesn't ask businesses when they're filling in their BASs, from which their GST liabilities are determined, where their customers and suppliers are located. The suggestion that WA is entitled to some predetermined proportion of the GST, which it falsely alleges is collected within its boundaries, makes no more sense than the suggestion that high-income taxpayers are entitled to some share of the income tax that they pay back in the form of cash benefits or services.
So we've only got about a minute up our sleeve. This has got quite personal. A mild-mannered economist has found himself on the front page of newspapers in Western Australia. You've been dubbed as the GST whinger-in-chief and the Deputy Premier has called your recent visit ironic. What do you make of this criticism from the West?
Well, I'm reminded of what my mother used to say, that if people can't make a point without resorting to personal insults, first, it says more about them than it does about you. And secondly, it says that perhaps the argument isn't as strong as they would like to think it is, and that perhaps they don't really feel confident enough to let their argument stand on its own merits without resorting to gratuitous personal insults. And, you know, it's surprising, and it's perhaps not surprising that the West Australian resorts to such juvenile tactics. That's perhaps fairly typical of them. I'm more surprised that Ms. Safiotti, the Treasurer and Deputy Premier of WA, feels the need to resort to personal insults. I've never been personally derogatory towards her. I've said, and I do, that she's been very prudent in managing the windfall gains that Western Australia has gained from this GST deal and from $11 billion a year in mineral royalties. And I've also said, I don't blame the Western Australian government for trying to screw as much money as they possibly can out of the federal government. That's a KPI for state governments. All voters at state elections expect their state governments to get money out of Canberra as much as they possibly can. My criticism is of federal politicians who've put the basest of political motives ahead of the national interest, and how they can, at the same time as they're giving the richest state in the country almost $6 billion more than it needs to provide a similar level of public services to its citizens as the other states, how they can at the same time claim to believe in equity or fiscal prudence just completely eludes me.
So, Eslake, good to have you back on the program. Thank you for your time this morning.
That's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Sally.